Good morning, everyone, or afternoon, I would say, if you're in New South Wales at the moment. This is Eric Perez, CEO of the Queensland Seafood Industry Association, joined today by Tricia Beattie. How are you going, Tricia?
Good, thanks, Eric. How are you?
Good, mate. Tricia is the CEO of the Professional Fishermen's Association of New South Wales. Did I get that right?
Yes.
Okay, so today we're continuing our look at what's happening with commercial fisheries around the country. The previous podcast focused on the ongoing issues with the Gippsland Lakes area, and so now we're moving north of there, but still south of us in New South Wales to discuss some issues around New South Wales commercial fishery. So over to you, Tricia, and I guess to start with, I'm hearing that there is a state election on the offering this year, or late this year or next year. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so our state election's March next year, so we're already having to start doing major preparations in regard to that. I'm sure it wouldn't come as any surprise to anyone listening that often our industry gets used as a quick and easy voting mechanism for people. It's a quick vote to kick the industry in the guts. And so, you know, we're very focused on trying to stop the propaganda against the industry, stop the stereotyping against the industry, and start having imagery of our industry that treats it like an asset rather than a threat, so that, you know, when people start deciding on what their election platforms will be, it won't be to the detriment of the industry, and rather, for a change, might actually be an investment into the future viability of an industry. So, you know, we're in the process of organising a day in Parliament, actually, to have a lunch with all the parliamentarians to showcase New South Wales seafood and actually start putting positive imagery and positive statements around our industry. We were very fortunate several years back to have an FIDC funded program with UTS looking at the social economic benefits of our industry. It was able to give us a toolkit of information that helped change the conversation that was going on in New South Wales. At the time, we were being described as a basically a 80 million dollar industry at farm gate prices, and we were able through the UTS study to able to show that no, the flow on impact of the industry and the flow on benefit of the industry is actually over $500 million a year to the New South Wales economy, number one. But more importantly, that study also showed that things along the lines of communities in New South Wales want to eat, that it was 96% of communities in New South Wales want to eat local New South Wales product. I think the figures along the lines of 86% of people wanted to see commercial fishing in action. There was also figures that showed that 76% of recreational fishers wanted to use locally caught commercial bait. Now, we were able to therefore use those figures and show the parliamentarians and the decision makers, hang on, you were getting told that if you close commercial fishing out of areas, you will therefore see an increase in recreational fishers and therefore see an increase in tourism expenditure in the area if you remove commercial fishing. We were able to change that conversation to say, no, look, actually, we have some independent scientific advice here that disproves that notion, that if you remove commercial fishing, you will not get that local seafood. You will not get your local commercially caught bait for your recreational fishers. That there was also figures that showed that I think it was 64% of commercial fishers at least once a year were involved in a search and rescue operation in their local communities. There was figures in there about how commercial fishing provided ice at local sports events. That there was a lot of things that we were able to show that didn't just look at the economic benefits of the fishing industry, but that social and cultural benefit of the industry as well. And we're able to engage in a different conversation, therefore, with parliamentarians. And so, you know, in our build-up to the election, we're getting those figures out there, and we're trying to disprove the propaganda, and we're trying to change the imagery that has been used against our industry. You would recall yourself that there was often things going on, like Greenpeace and WWF were using imagery to describe the Australian commercial fishing industry. There was actually photos taken of the Gulf of Mexico commercial fishing industries. So it's getting in there and talking to the decision makers about, this is what we look like. We are actually small, family-operated, fifth-generational fishers who are the backbone of your regional remote communities. And if you get rid of us, you also remove those school kids out of your local school. You also remove that access to seafood. You also remove a major community backbone if you remove us. So it's trying to have that conversation and rewire the parliamentarians' decisions to our benefit leading up to the election. So we're putting a lot of work into that. However, what's happened recently with Gippsland?
Hang on, before we go there, just to quickly sum up, it sounds like a really good strategy, and you mentioned that project you did to the university. Could you send me a link so that I can make that available with the podcast for people to have a look if they want it?
Absolutely.
Okay, so, and apologies for interrupting now twice, but yeah, so that you're leading into the second question that I'd like to put to you around, what is your view of what's happening in Victoria around the Gippsland area to do with commercial net fishing, and maybe any broader insights you might have of what does this mean for commercial fishing more generally? Because we all have a view about this, but you're another person in a position of advocacy like I am, and it'd be good to get your take on that. So over to you, mate.
Look, I think the whole Gippsland Lake situation has absolutely kicked everybody in the guts, and we're not even in that state. It's just demonstrated to the rest of us that you can do everything that all the experts tell us to do. You can engage and improve your social license within a community. You can have a good relationship with stakeholders and decision makers. You can be doing absolutely everything in your powers to ensure that you are proven to be sustainable and proven to be a backbone within communities, and then you can still get some absolute asshat come along at the 13th hour and make a decision that is absolutely disgusting in its irresponsibility. And it brings me in mind of things that happened back in New South Wales a long time ago in regards to the establishment of our recreational fishing havens. And I would point out that the two fisheries ministers in New South Wales that were part of that recreational fishing haven establishment are now in jail for corruption.
Okay, so it's fairly raw then, to say the least, from what you're saying. Look, the reason I brought up New South Wales, and I'll put my two cents in before I ask you the next question, is that there seems to be no formula to stop politicians using us as a political football wherever you are on the East Coast, and it's not a good trend into the future, and hopefully there'll be a win down in Victoria. I think there's another 2 weeks of campaigning until that election, and I'm hoping the good people of Victoria potentially kick out the incumbent government and give industry an opportunity or some hope with a new government down there. I'm not overly worried what politicians of Victoria think about that statement, but it is what it is. I'm here to look after the interests of my industry and our cousins interstate. Hopefully they'll get some justice out of this. More so than what's gotten out of Port Phillip or the net-free zones. But so you've covered a fair few things there. Is there anything else you'd like to bring up about what's happening around the traps in New South Wales?
Yeah, look, when this whole reform started for us in New South Wales, and the initial bit of the conversation was all about viability in our industry, and then the conversation evolved and it stopped being so much about viability of our industry and started being a lot about government proofing our industry. And no matter what's happened, and, you know, I won't get into what's happened in the reform because it's all a bit raw at the moment and we're still going through some pretty nasty situations at the moment in regards to our quota allocation, and we're in the middle of negotiation and trying to see a light at the end of the tunnel after some pretty crap news. But, you know, we're trying to fight our way out of it. But it's all this concept of trying to government-proof your industry, whether it's through taking a co-management approach or whether it's through third-party certification. We're all desperately trying to ensure that, you know, we are government-proofed as an industry, that we don't become these election kicking balls that we've seen down in Gippsland, we've seen in Queensland, we've seen in New South Wales during the RFH developments in marine parks. How we do that, we keep on coming up with new ways. Like, we keep on getting told things like, well, social license, you know, it's the community making the decisions, therefore you have to have a better relationship with the community. And then it's, well, hang on, it happens through changes to your regulations, so how do you put in something that government proofs your regulations, and people talk about things like quota, although I'm not too sure how quota can government proof your industry. We talk about things like third-party certification because people don't have trust in their governments anymore and therefore require an outside party to certify you so that they won't stuff around with the industry. I mean, we're really trying to engage in this in the industry in ways that basically make you tamper-proof, that allows you to have some form of security of access and some form of being left alone to just get on with your job. And, you know, I still haven't found the magic solution that will leave us alone. And I guess that's what's feeling so raw at the moment with Gippsland and what's happening in New South Wales and what's happening in Queensland, is we're all feeling very raw. And we all, you know, there was a mental health discussion recently, and one guy rightly put the words, the doom, the feeling of doom in the industry, and us in these industry bodies trying to keep it positive and trying to keep it proactive and trying to keep the ball rolling to try and find differing ways to government-proof and tamper-proof your industry so that it's got security of access and viability.
Yeah, okay. Look, Tricia, thanks for your time today. I'm sure there's more that we can talk about once the reform process is moved on in New South Wales, and there'll be more to discuss up here, I guess, around the reform process. So I'm hoping we can do another podcast in the near future. And look, I'd like to thank you for your time. So for the listeners, that was Tricia Beattie, the Chief Executive Officer of the Professional Fishermen's Association of New South Wales. And I'd like to thank you again for your time, Tricia. And thanks to everyone for listening, and we'll catch you on the next podcast.
No problem. Thank you.
See you, mate.
Bye.